But Gogi Combatives is still the premier destination to learn mixed martial arts here in the Tennessee Valley, located out in Rossville, Georgia, just a short drive away from where I'm recording this podcast in downtown Chattanooga, Tennessee. You're going to find a Gogi Combatives. At a Gogi Combatives, you're going to learn real mixed martial arts. That's the key word there. Real mixed martial arts from the top coaches and athletes in the region, like Jazzy, the Jazzmanian, Devil Sergeant, Torres Finney, and so many other fantastic MMA athletes that we have. Really fortunate to have a place like Gogi Combatives and Trevor Peak, who recently just earned an MMA UFC contract, trained at a Gogi Combatives. So you know they're teaching the real deal there. And if you just want to pick up a hobby, meet new people, or seriously take that sport for real, a Gogi Combatives is going to be the place for you. If you want to learn more and view all of their classes, head on over to agogicombatives.com. Once again, that's agogicombatives.com.
Now you're all in big, big trouble.
You're suspect.
This is how I win.
All right, we are back here on the Watch It Podcast, here on ESPN 95.3, ESPNChattanooga.com, wherever you're listening, Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher. People still use Stitcher? I don't know. This other podcast I work for, 4% of their downloads are from Stitcher, which is very fascinating. When I was in school, man, that was like when in U College, let me specify, that was when podcasts were really on the come up. You know, they had been around, but it was really just like Apple Podcasts was the only place really you could get them. But then right around like 2016, 2017, when the podcast explosion happened, which I fully attribute to true crime podcasts, we could do a whole episode about why I feel like those are so popular. That was when everything, you started seeing the big podcast names come out there. There was Stitcher, Google, there was, what was the other one, Scribe. There were so many of them. And it was, Luminary was the, that's the other one. And it was the thing, what was like, all these podcasts, it was the first time, like from a marketing perspective, that you know, they had options and platform distribution and things like that. So it's like it got tough for a while because it was like some people would sign a contract with Luminary and they have exclusive podcast feeds over there. And it's kind of like Audible now, where Audible has a lot of my podcasts that I listen to. So I have to have Audible to listen to like Disgraceland and everything like that with the newest episodes when they come out. And then there's some people who just totally block the podcast behind a wall, like a Patreon wall. And that's not the worst thing ever. In some instances, I'm not mad about that. Like John Bernthal, for example, he has this podcast called Real Ones. And that's hidden behind a paywall for like the first month. But I'm not mad about the way he does it. He has AMAs and everything. He does a good job with that. But somebody who did not do a good job last night over in Nashville, Tennessee, was the Tennessee Titans. Things not looking good. Trouble in Tennessee. And you know all I have to say about this? The people who are so excited about the Titans. I told you. I tried to tell you. And you didn't listen to me. You said I was crazy. When I said on this podcast that the Tennessee Titans, and I also said this on The Road with G before I stopped doing the live radio here at ESPN 95.3, I said that the Titans were going to be the team to take the biggest step back this year. And some people are like, oh my God, how could you say that? Because it's true, bro, it's true. And we saw that. 2 weeks in a row we've seen that. Last week in a 41-7 loss to the Buffalo Bills. Yeah, I know they're the Super Bowl favorites, but if you're a team who wants to be in contention, especially a team who plays in one of the worst divisions in football, if you want to really mark yourself out there as a true contender and not the ultimate pretender, you at least need to put up more points than 7. And then, of course, they had the loss to one of the worst teams ever, the New York Football Giants, who got a win again out in Carolina. So maybe they're not as bad as people think, but I don't know. We'll see about them. They're kind of weird. But the Titans, the best way to phrase this is if you watch both Monday night games last night, you saw two very different teams on display. In the first game, we had the Buffalo Bills and the Tennessee Titans, and in the second, we had the Eagles and the Vikings. Tennessee loses A.J. Brown, Eagles get A.J. Brown, and in both games, in one way or another, he was the difference maker. For the Eagles, having him as an option for Jalen Hurts changes the dynamic of that field, able to stretch the field out a little bit more than they had previously been able to do. And for Tennessee, that field shrinks up quite fast because their receivers not looking great. And even in their backfield, Derrick Henry, very disappointing so far this year. And a lot of this comes down to coaching. I hate to say it because I like Mike Vrabel. He's a nice guy. But maybe he's not the best coach for this team. I can think clearly several times in their first two games where you have Derrick Henry in your backfield and it's third or fourth down, third and one, four and one, four inches. You give the ball to Derrick Henry. This is like the Marshawn Lynch Seahawks Super Bowl with the Patriots. If you have a running back who can truck and do that power and is one, a 6'2 running back who can stretch, you hand the damn ball off. You don't give it to Ryan Tannehill to throw 3 feet into the ground. You don't. And that's another thing, man, Tannehill. I've been a Ryan Tannehill naysayer for some time. I thought I was going to be silenced a couple years ago. And now he's just proving me right all over again. Because if there's any pressure whatsoever, Tannehill is folding. He doesn't have the ability to scramble out of the pocket like the guy waiting in the wings Malik Lewis has. He just doesn't. And it's tough to watch because this really was a Tennessee team that had a hellacious amount of potential. And it just seems like they're kind of falling by and by to the wayside here. And another team that surprised me was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They have the worst receiver luck of all time. It was so bad that they just had to sign Cole Beasley. And of course, I'm talking about Brady getting into the scuff and Mike Evans comes and jumps in. Evans gets suspended. Godwin's going to be out. Julio Jones out. So they added all these receivers to help Tom Brady out after he returned from retirement, made sure they had depth in that position. And then they're kind of just falling back into the same trap with injuries. And it's only week two, the second week of the season, and they're already in this peril right now. It was also a big week for comebacks. Game of the week, in my opinion, had to have been Miami and Baltimore. I mean, that was an incredible comeback for a team that looked totally out of it, man. And then you also have the Cardinals and the Raiders. The Cardinals looked done. They looked absolutely done. And then Kyler Murray just starts zapping in the shape like he does, like double XP weekend. And then they get the win against the Raiders. Crazy weekend that we had here in the NFL. Also want to just go ahead and say, while we're on the topic of sports, before we switch over to entertainment here, that I was wrong. Corey Sandhagen got the win against Song Yadong on that UFC fight night. But we're going to talk more UFC on Friday, I believe. I recorded that episode last week with some UFC takes. That's going to be a massive episode. So keeping it short and sweet today, that episode on Friday is going to be the top 10 Game of Thrones moments, celebrating the halfway point of House of the Dragon, which had another killer episode on Sunday. One of the best the show's had so far. One of the best, honestly, of Game of Thrones, even. That's two in a row that they've done where I've said that. But this week, man, I mean, we'll touch on that at the end of the episode. But I want to go into the elephant in the room. A lot of people have been asking me about what I think of the Grand Theft Auto 6 leak that occurred on Sunday at 3 a.m. pretty much. I woke up and just saw all of these videos of what is easily the most anticipated game of all time that is kind of hasn't been announced. I mean, it's confirmed to be real that Rockstar was working on it, but we had gotten zero. Not a CGI trailer, not a title, nothing. We just knew they were working on a new Grand Theft Auto. So we got our first look at it illicitly through a leak that happened on GrandTheftAutoForums.com. And that, of course, disseminated all throughout the internet. Everyone was seeing this. And it wasn't just like a little leak either. You know, you think of leaks like this and it's like a fuzzy screenshot, some concept art, like a cover of a game. But never before do I remember that we get like 40 minutes almost of gameplay, segmented, showing off some pretty important elements of this game. So the first thing is that there's going to be two protagonists, or at least it appears to be so, like a Bonnie and Clyde story, which kind of backs up another leak that happened not too long ago. It's going to be set in Vice City, but it looks like they're going to be doing the GTA 5 San Andreas route like they did for Los Angeles and Southern California, where they're going to be doing like all of South Florida for Vice City, which I think is fun because that's a place I go to a lot. That's half of where my job is right there in South Florida. So I'm excited to see how that turns out. And it turns out that the build of the game that was leaked was actually from a 2019 pre-alpha build on a running on a PlayStation 4. So for the critics out there, and I say critics, these are not like real, you know, journalists. They're just people on Twitter who said the game looked bad. Keep that in mind. And also, they just know nothing about how development works. The bells and whistles, the cool visuals, all those lighting effects, that's the last thing that gets added. They want to make sure it plays okay first. And to me, this looked better than 90% of games that released today. The thing I could not stop thinking about while watching the videos of the leaks and looking at the images was the new Saints Row that released just last month. Literally a month ago today, that game released. And it was so outdated, the way it looked. And it wasn't for like an art style direction. You know, you think of games like Telltale's The Walking Dead or Borderlands even, and they take that art style and they make it something unique and timeless. But then you have games like Saints Row where it's just a shooter that just looks outdated. It looks like a 360 game. But even from this 2019 PS4 build of Grand Theft Auto 5, it looked demonstrably better than that. And that was kind of how I knew the leaks were real. The first one I saw was like a diner robbery. It looked a lot like that scene in Pulp Fiction. They're sticking up the diner, and I could just tell by the way that the character was turning and their head was moving and the shoulders that this was clearly a Grand Theft Auto 6. This was definitely a Rockstar game because the movement was identical to Red Dead Redemption 2, which of course was Rockstar's last game. It looked a lot like that, but it had that kind of cleaner tone, cleaner visual, sleek style that Grand Theft Auto is more known with is, of course, Red Dead Redemption 2, grittier Western. But then you saw the driving, you saw the world, you also saw the leaks with the dialogue and everything and the music, and it was clearly real, and Rockstar came out and said they were devastated about the leaks, which I totally understand for all those developers to put so much time and work into something that's not even close to being done, but having that release and people judging it just right then and there, get in your head about what you're doing next. It's just not fun. Not necessarily something I was very excited about. I mean, of course, I was excited to see the game, but just wish it was under a little bit of a different circumstance than that, as this is clearly going to be the most anticipated game of all time. It's going to be one of the highest selling of all time. I mean, just look at Grand Theft Auto 5. It came out in 2013, and week by week, it's still in the top 10 highest selling list. So a lot of people excited about it. I find myself even more excited about it following these leaks. And something else that I was excited about that I've kind of taken a little bit of time to get into talking about because I wanted to kind of wait and digest these awards and really contemplate how I felt about them was the 2022 Emmys out in Los Angeles hosted by Kenan Thompson on NBC. Watched it, got all the winners. And I have some takes, most of which I will say that I pretty much agree with it. But we'll still break down the winners here for some of the categories that I feel like you guys would care the most about. But first, I want to get into one of the smaller categories, and that is Variety Talk Series. Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, of course, wins that. That is just going to be taking all the W's when it comes to that category for a very long time, I feel like. As long as that show's on, it's the mark to beat. Even on HBO, they have other kind of shows like that, and it just falls flat because the pacing of John Oliver, the jokes, the speed, the visuals, everything about it, it's clear, concise, and fun, even when diving into some of the heavier topics. The big winner for limited series and anthologies was The White Lotus on HBO, which is a fantastic miniseries following a resort. Not only did it win Best Limited Series, it won Best Writing for Limited Series, it won Best Supporting Actress for a Limited Series, with Jennifer Coolidge taking the award, a very well-earned award for someone who's had a great career, a very diverse career, and definitely found their best performance in The White Lotus, which is confirmed for a season two, so I'm kind of interested about the Limited Series. I guess it'll start going more into the anthology category, but it was a big night there for them. Also, another big night for Ted Lasso, which if you listen to this podcast, you know that is one of my favorite shows on TV. Outstanding show, as it does win Outstanding Comedy Series. Really fantastic. To me, the only show that really could put up a fight against it right now is What We Do in the Shadows in terms of comedy, which unfortunately came up short pretty much in every category, even though it just wrapped up a stellar fourth season and if confirmed for a fifth and a sixth. I hope there's many, many more after that. But not only did Ted Lasso win Outstanding Comedy Series, Jason Sudeikis again is going to take home the gold for his portrayal of Ted Lasso, one of the most wholesome characters ever put to screen, and then one of the funniest characters, and honestly another extremely endearing character, is going to be Brett Goldstein playing Roy Kent. Roy Kent is the man. Brett Goldstein's the man. And I know a lot more people are getting introduced to Brett Goldstein now as he's going to be Hercules in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is just awesome. I really like Brett Goldstein, and I really love the character of Roy Kent. This season took him to places that were very different than where we saw Roy in the first season, his relationship with Keeley and his niece and everything like that. And plus, we had the amazing sequences of him on the Sky News panel.
Roy Kent, ex-Chelsea legend, joins us. Welcome, Roy. Right, what did you think? Did your former club play well?
No, I thought they played like shit.
Our apologies to the viewing audience. Roy Kent with some salty language.
Would you care to elaborate, Roy?
All right. Chelsea was shit today. That's shocking.
Watching them, you'd never know they were playing at home. They were too timid. They were too respectful of United. They were lucky they didn't lose by 3 or 4 or 10.
That's harsh, Roy. United's been on a good run recently.
Who gives a shit, Chris?
That's no excuse to play like you're afraid of them.
You could see it in their faces. Abject terror, like children waiting in line for the handsy Father Christmas.
Have some fucking pride in your shirt or don't fucking wear it.
He's incredible on this show. Watching back that clip, man, it's clear to understand why Roy Kent is such a fan favorite. And obviously the same can be said about pretty much every scene that Jason Sudeikis found himself in with that show. And the big winner for dramas was going to, of course, be what I've been saying is clearly to me the objectively best show on television. That's going to be Succession, that won Best Drama Series for very good reason. Season 3 was outstanding. We also had some wins in the specific categories. We had Matthew McFadden won for Best Supporting Actor. He plays Tom on the show, and if you've watched Succession, you know that Season 3 was Tom's big moment coming out. And while I'm very glad for Matthew McFadden, I'm a little bit surprised they didn't go to Kieran Culkin for his display as Roman Roy on that show. I thought that was a lock, but I'm glad that McFadden won it. He was great. He's been great in pretty much everything he's in, so I'm happy to see him get the W here. And then I want to talk about a couple of surprises. Something that wasn't surprising, though, was Zendaya winning lead actress for Euphoria. Everybody in the world saw that coming. And then Julia Garner also, this is to me surprising, but a lot of people were not surprised by this, that Julia Garner, who plays Ruth on Ozark, took home the gold for the final season of Ozark. But what surprised me here was the lead actor category. The winner was the guy from Squid Game, which is understandable. I've heard he's great in it. I still haven't watched Squid Game yet, but Better Call Saul was totally shut out at these awards. What I thought was a stellar final season. It was shut out, and I thought Bob Odenkirk was a lock for lead actor. But nevertheless, went to the guy from Squid Games, which, you know, you could be more mad about things. But overall, I mean, it was a pretty cut and dry Emmys. A couple other categories that nobody should be surprised about was lead actor in a limited series with Michael Keaton. And then lead actress was Amanda Seyfried. That's just kind of how it goes. With you have those big names in limited series, they immediately draw more attention and you're ready to go. But speaking of things that draw attention and a little tease for our next week's episode was episode 5 of House of the Dragon. I've been talking about House of the Dragon pretty much weekly now on this podcast because it is such a stellar show. And before we get it, we have to do our weekly Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, House of the Dragon scorecard. This last episode of Rings of Power that released last Friday, I believe it was episode 4, was stellar. It was the best episode the show's ever done. I wish we would get more like that, and I hope moving forward we do. But back to House of the Dragon, which has another pretty damn near perfect episode. With episode 5, it was a wedding episode, which we all know how those things go down in the world of Game of Thrones. They never do end well. And this was another case of that. So in this episode, we have the final appearance of Emma Darcy, of Millie Alcock as Rhaenyra. And then I forgot the name, Emily something, who plays Alicent Hightower. It's their last appearance before they switch over to the new actors. Emma Darcy will be playing Rhaenyra, who I'm very excited about. And then somebody else will be playing Queen Alicent Hightower as well. Matt Smith and everybody, Patty Constantine, they are going to be staying on. But this wedding that we saw in House of the Dragon episode 5, everything was starting off very well. The whole episode, things were running rather smoothly, with the exception of King Viserys collapsing in the courtyard and everything, needing more leeches, which I do not know how this man is still alive after all these episodes. Each week, I think this is the end, but looking at the preview next week, he's much older, and I do believe it is the end for our boy Viserys coming up soon. But the main big conflict of this episode is that neither Rhaenyra or her promised husband, Laenor Velaryon, are very interested in the marriage. They have different, you know, sexual preferences. And that all comes to a head when this moment happens by another dumbass character in this world named Joffrey.
With the Knight of Kisses, though, I don't know why.
You don't know me, Sir Criston.
If you have something to say, Sir Joffrey.
Sir Laenor is quite dear to me. The princess is to you.
We should swear to each other to guard them.
And so are we all.
And that just sets him off because, as we remember, Sir Christian Cole, very much in love with Rhaenyra in this episode, tries to convince her to take... go away with him, move to Essos. Doesn't happen. And he freaks out on Joffrey and he beats his skull in. One of the most violent scenes we've had of the series so far. Totally badass, though. And then the episode ends with him about ready to commit suicide in the courtyard. And then the queen stops him. And then we have the whole scene between Daemon and Rhaenyra. I mean, this show is absolutely insane. And next week, we are going to be getting into our top 10 Game of Thrones moments, celebrating the halfway point of this astounding show that we've been granted so far. And yeah, no House of the Dragon moments on that, I decided, even though I think this would probably make that list if I went back and redid that. Going to be doing some traveling this weekend, so wanted to get that episode out a little early. Be looking for that early on Friday morning. But that is all the time that we have for today's episode of the show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Like to keep the... the Wednesday episodes very light, kind of fun, happy, carefree, short and sweet. But that's all the time we have for today. Make sure you check out on Friday for those top 10 Game of Thrones moments. You do not want to miss that. And thank you all so much for listening to the Watch It Podcast. ¶¶